Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Landis-Sky Regional Council COVID-19 response call. We've been holding these calls every week on Thursdays at 1 p.m. We're trying to share information among the region and hopefully helping us all respond better to the many challenges that COVID-19 has brought upon us. Before we get the call started, just want to remind everyone that this call is being recorded. So encourage you to know that. Everyone will be muted when they join the call. If you have any questions of the presenters or would like to bring something to our attention, please use the group chat, or you can also send a private message to us to do that. You can also text me at 828-768-3216. If you have any questions. Again, that number is 828-768-3216. So just that way you'll allow us to know whether, you would like to speak, and then we can unmute you from our end. Just from a security standpoint, we're trying to limit the ability of participants to speak and to share content. So that's the purpose for that. We have people joining the call as we speak, so we'll allow them to continue joining, but we have Drew Christie with the governor's office with us, and we'll start the presentation from Drew. He'll give us an update from Governor Cooper's office. Drew, are you available?
I am, Nathan. Thank you so much, Nathan and Landis-Sky Regional Council, for hosting this, bringing updates from the governor's office, and I'll go into some details about some things and an announcement as well, too. As of yesterday, North Carolina had 7,220 positive cases with 242 deaths. On Tuesday, Governor Cooper signed an executive order to help furloughed employees get unemployment benefits, even if they have received a severance or furlough payment. With that, a furlough is defined by the U.S. Department of Labor as payment for services rendered, not for unworked time. So that helps clarify some language for the Department of Employment Securities. So people can that were furloughed and paid for that time rendered can now apply for unemployment insurance. And with that, there are some key things that the employers must do to get this process started. Employers must submit an employer-filed unemployment insurance claim according to guidance provided by the Division of Employment Securities for each employee receiving COVID-19 support payments. And all of this is also listed on Executive Order 134, excuse me. The employer's COVID-19 support payment plan must A, detail the anticipated length of the furlough, B, state the amount of the COVID-19 support payments, C, identify the names of employees receiving COVID-19 support payments, D, include a promise that employer is not making the COVID-19 support payment as a form of remuneration for the employee's performance of personal service during the furlough, and E, lastly, include a promise that employees are not required to return or repay the COVID-19 support payments. So those are kind of some of the requirements for employers for this thing. And again, all these are found on Governor Cooper's Executive Order 134. I see we have several state legislators on here, and I know the governor and Legislative leaders have agreed to do more for small business owners in North Carolina by providing more funding for the Rapid Recovery Loan Program, which is run by the NC Rural Center and Golden Leaf Foundation. So that's kind of all I have there. The one announcement I have today at 3 o'clock, Governor Cooper will be making or giving a briefing about how, as a state, we will be moving forward and trying to reopen the state. I won't go into any more specifics. I'll let Governor Cooper cover that. You can watch it if you're at home. You can watch it on PBS, or I can provide the link in the chat box to view the live stream as well. And I'm open for any questions. If any come up, feel free to put them in the chat box and I'll respond to them as I can. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you so much, Drew. And we appreciate you providing updates from Governor Cooper's office. And we encourage every one of your schedule allows to get into his announcement today at 3 p.m. We're fortunate today to have representatives of Advent Health with us. And we understand that it may be a while before our businesses and organizations can reopen. But, you know, there's been a discussion about when that should take place and under what terms that should take place. And so we thought at this week's call, it would be good to give some guidance on helping organizations know how to do that and do it safely to protect your customers and your employees. So I'd like to now turn it over to Graham Fields with Advent Health, and he will introduce the team with Advent Health who are with us, and they can start their presentation. Again, remind everyone if they do have questions of the presenters to submit that in the group chat, or you can also text me to 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. Graham, are you available?
I am, Nathan. Thank you so much for the opportunity. We're grateful for this chance. You know, you said it very well. As our region looks at ways to open up in our economy in the wake of COVID-19, one of the key components that will factor into that is employee screening and workplace safety. We all know that health and workplace have always been connected, but they'll be really intertwined in the next few weeks. So our goal today is to assemble a team that can work with area businesses, our local governments and nonprofits to really begin thinking about what workplace safety looks like in the wake of this pandemic. We want to kind of equip you with the knowledge and resources to confidently begin looking at ways to reopen as our government officials set that in motion. So Advent Health has developed a set of guidelines that we've utilized at the hospital over the last few months and have folks that have best practices to share with you that we believe could easily be applied to your business or your organization. So really our goal today, like we said, is to kind of talk about that from an agenda setting standpoint, but also to be a partner and a resource throughout. So at any point over the next few weeks, please feel free to reach out. We've got a great team to speak with you today. Our first speaker will be Dr. Teresa Herbert, who is our chief medical officer. She has led our organization through this pandemic and has been a leader in our region and in our community. We also have Michael Duncan, who is our infection preventionist, and he'll talk a little bit more specifically about some of the work that we're doing in our own facilities and how that might be applied. We've also got Christy Sneller, our vice president, and Mark Merrill, our administrative director from an operations side. Again, we welcome your questions in the chat box or even later, as Nathan said, and it's my pleasure to introduce our chief medical officer, Dr. Teresa Herbert.
Dr. Herbert, I think you should be unmuted if you're ready to proceed. Okay, she's trying to talk.
Yeah, it's on her end,
not ours. Dr. Herbert, I think you may be muted on your end. Can you check your settings?
Where is she?
I apologize. Just hold on one moment. I think we're going to have. Dr. Herbert, can you hear us?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am. Okay, thank you, Dr.
Good.
Herbert, for joining.
I'm so sorry. A little technical difficulty with new buttons. I'm in Christy's office now. Can you see me? Yeah.
We can.
Hi. Okay. All right. Hi, everyone. Yeah. So my name is Teresa Herbert. I'm the Chief Medical Officer at Advent Health Hendersonville. And my job here is to be responsible for patient safety and quality of care at the hospital. And as we've moved into this pandemic situation, that has been a really large job for me, a really important job, and one that I've had to work on with my whole team. We have come to the point we are right now where we're moving from containment to recovery. But before I talk anymore, I just want to give you the update on Henderson County statistics, because if you look at the data, Henderson County has 147 cases of COVID-19 with 13 deaths, compared to Buncombe, which has only reported 49 cases with 3 deaths. And that sounds alarming to the general public. My husband says, wow, why have you got so much disease here? The reason we have higher numbers in Henderson County is because we've had a really great collaboration with the health department, and we've been able to go into congregate living facilities, skilled nursing facilities, and assisted living facilities where there have been some outbreaks, and we've been able to manage those patients in their homes and keep them in their homes to avoid us having the surge. The health department's done a wonderful job of doing intensive testing, so they'll be testing hundreds of people at a time, and that's why our numbers look so high. I know, as a physician based in the hospital, that we are not seeing a lot of community spread, so we're not seeing a lot of sick patients coming into our emergency departments, coming into our clinics, showing up on our as an inpatient. Our ICU right now has very few patients, and when I talk to my colleagues at Pardee and up at Mission, they are in the same situation. There's not a lot of community spread right now. So I want to thank everyone on the call for the work that you've all done with physical distancing and the stay at home order, because that has really saved lives. If you look down at Greenville County, things are very different down there. The hospitals are very, very busy. They have many sick people on ventilators and a much higher number of deaths. So a credit to our community already for the work that we've done to identify cases, to care for those cases in the appropriate place and not overwhelm our health services. So we've got to the point now where we've put a lot of great processes in place where we feel that it's safe for us to go back to business, but it's not business as usual. It's going to be a new way of practicing both medicine and for your businesses, a new way of doing business in your workspaces. So what is that going to look like? We have to balance public health concerns with economic concerns. We know that we can't stay locked at home forever. So things that we'll be doing as a health community is tracking the levels of infections, testing and tracking patients who are infected, and protecting our healthcare workers and those most at risk. So what can you anticipate as you return to work? I know that as a community, and I have felt it myself, I felt a high level of stress worrying about what does this mean for me? What does it mean for my family? So I think for your workspaces, it's really important that you follow some simple measures, and those can go a long way towards keeping everybody safe and keeping everyone healthy. Simple measures like social distancing, staying 6 feet apart, rigorous cleaning of surfaces, lots of hand washing, providing masks for your staff, and screening of staff so that if they're sick, they stay home. I know there's conflicting interests for everyone. We need to get our paychecks. We need to come to work. But if you come to work sick, we know COVID-19 is very contagious and it can quickly spread through a whole workplace. So Michael is going to talk to you about some of the measures that we have put in place and that we can help you with. So I think I'm going to stop right now and take any questions if you have any, because I could talk about the work we've done in the hospital. It's been, and the reason I would do that would be to let you know that all the three area hospitals are ready to deal with a surge of COVID-19 if it happens. We've spent weeks and actually a couple of months now planning on how to respond if we see a lot of disease, but we haven't seen that yet. So now we have to figure out how do we go back to business safely. So Michael, are you on the call? Can you unmute Michael?
Dr. Herbert, we have one question. What would screening look like in the workplace? So we've heard of employers that are doing daily temperature checks.
Yes.
You know, that type of thing. Is that considered the best practice? Is that something we should do?
It is. You know, we have at the doors to our facility, everyone has to answer a question if they have any signs, and then we actually are doing daily temperature checks on everybody. And that has been described as the best practice. It's pretty simple to do with some training, and provides a level of security that you don't always get from just the questions. I'll be honest with you. At the beginning of this, we had some issues with both staff and patients saying that they were okay and actually they weren't. So taking the temperature is a much more objective way of figuring out if someone is getting sick.
And what would that temperature be, Dr. Herbert, that, you know, we've heard a 98.6, but then I've heard, you know, until it's a certain number, you know, you wouldn't express a concern. And how do employers, I think ideally they would get the, you know, no touch thermometers that you don't have to stick in someone's mouth. How available are those?
Oh, well, the thermometer's been on back order and we had issues with that too. So, Michael can give you more details on that, but the no-touch thermometers are very good, providing you're not coming in from the cold. At the beginning of our screening, we had issues with people registering temperatures as if they were dead, with temperatures of 94 or so forth, because they had a cold face. But now the weather's warming up, that's less of an issue, and the no-touch thermometers are very simple to use and much more reliable if the air temperature around you is normal. We don't do oral temperatures here. We've been using a one that rolls across your forehead that's pretty easy to use as well, but that requires a little more technology. So no touch is probably the way to go. So,
Dr. Herbert, what temperature should an employer be concerned about? What should that cutoff be?
Anything over 100 should be the what we do with our staff is we have them go to their car and then we do a little more detailed questions, and then we rescreen them, because when you get back into the inside environment, we found that temperature can actually be higher than 100. That door screening temperature may be lower than the real temperature for that person. But anything of 100 or above is a time to say, hold on a moment before you go in. Let's do a little more investigations.
And Dr. Herbert, we've had two other questions. I think you addressed this, but to clarify. Said how many COVID patients are in ICU in our region, if you're aware of that number, or aware of Advent Health?
I can say we don't have any COVID patients at Advent Health right now. I know that Pardee has a couple, and Mission has just a handful. There's less than a handful in both facilities. Because this is a small community, I want to protect patients' privacy. But the patients that are in that ICU over at Pardee are related to the long-term care facility outbreaks. They were known to be infected when they came into the facility. And up at Mission, they have just a few patients there, but it's really a very low number. I spoke with Dr. Hathaway this morning, and he's reporting the same as we are, that there's just a handful, less than 10.
Dr. Herbert, you mentioned Greenville. You're referring to Greenville County, South Carolina?
Yes. Greenville County, Spartanburg County, and Anderson County have way more cases registered than we do. And they also have many more patients on their ICUs. They have a lot of sickness there.
And a final question we received. for the your employees' emotional health, because this entire episode we've all been through is very challenging to individuals, their families. What suggestions do you have on how employers can support their workplace, their workforce with their emotional health?
That's a really great question, and I have felt that keenly here at Advent Health. Our frontline workers, our healthcare workers, have you turn on the TV, you look on Facebook, and you see that healthcare workers are dying in hospitals across the country. So there's been a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. Some people have been unable to come to work because of their anxiety. We've supported them as best we can, but practically what I found to be most helpful is really clear and transparent communication, listening to people's concerns, and providing them with the equipment that they need. So if they're in an environment where they're facing the community, then they should be wearing a mask. That's the recommendation. Provide them with a mask. If you need to be able to clean they need to be able to clean their workspaces. They need to be able to socially distance. And the other thing that as well as those practical measures, the clear and honest communication is something that's been really hard to find. And I have had some I've talked to my medical staff and my staff every day. Christy Sneller and I have a lunchtime phone call where we give the state of the union, what's happened since yesterday, how much personal protective equipment do we have, how is our testing going, how many patients are affected, what mistakes we've made. I'm very transparent when we're having difficulties. There was one day at the beginning of this crisis when we only had enough face masks to last us a day and a half. And as a leader, for me to have to say that was very uncomfortable. But I wanted people to understand that I'm in it with them and we're doing the best we can. And the reason why you don't get a new face mask every time you see a patient is because we really don't have enough. We're working on it. So I found my staff to be really grateful for an honest answer to a difficult question. And I would get texts while I was on the call and emails afterwards saying, thank you for being straight with us. One of the things we've seen from other communities is that leadership can be evasive and confabulate and distract. And you want to know, I want to know, am I safe? How are you going to keep me safe? And if you can't keep me safe, what steps are you going to take until you keep me safe? So those are the kind of conversations we have had at the beginning. And every day I report out the numbers. I report out if patients have died. I give a respectful amount of information on the circumstances so people understand that where these things are happening so they still feel safe. So that's been really important to keep people confident. We had a number of workers who were PRN workers, which means they kind of work on demand. And at the beginning of this, they took themselves off the schedules and said, no, I don't want to step foot in the hospital. And now they are happy and comfortable to come back because we provided them with the equipment they need and the information they need to stay safe.
Dr. Herbert, I think Michael should be available if he needs to speak. We can do a follow-up. You mentioned earlier the concern of a lack of PPE. It sounds like we're seeing a greater availability of PPE, and that at least for our hospitals, you have what maybe not all that you need, but you have an adequate supply. How would you characterize PPE supply, at least for the hospitals right now?
I think the PPE, you're correct. At the beginning, we were scrambling because we were not prepared for the level of PPE that we needed. And there was a couple of weeks there where we really had some difficulties. Local emergency management were actually able to help us on that day I told you about. So I thank them for that. And Advent Health has been securing supplies for our system across the country. And I know that Pardee Hospital has much better supplies now, and HCA Mission has access to greater buying power, so they're doing quite well too. So we are safe to practice in our hospitals and in our clinics. We've been able in our outpatient clinics to provide masks, not just for our staff, but for any patient now coming in will be given a face mask. So we've been able to go a little above and beyond the minimum requirements now, which makes me really happy. And of course, makes our staff and our patients feel safe.
If you want to transition over to Michael lead the presentation.
I am.
Thank you. I'm going to let you speak here and see if I can figure out this mute thing. There you go.
All right. Well, as has been said, my name is Michael Duncan. I'm a registered nurse and the infection preventionist for Advent Health Hendersonville. I know that you're all interested in getting your businesses back up and running, and there are some certain things that are being recommended for you to do that safely for your employees. If you go to the whitehouse.gov website, you'll see the federal guidelines for employers. Some of the things that they're asking for are social distancing and protective equipment for your employees, temperature checks, sanitation, the use of disinfection common in high traffic areas, and reduced business travel. Those are all federal recommendations for employers during all three phases of the reopening. If you check the packet that you were sent out on the cover letter, you'll see the exact same questions that we used to screen our employees as they enter our facility. We ask them if they have a fever. We also take their temperature. We ask them if they have a cough, shortness of breath, or difficulty breathing. We ask if they have chills, muscle aches, abdominal pain, and we also ask if they've lost their sense of smell or sense of taste. These are all pretty common symptoms. It won't catch everybody who may be infected coming into your facility, but it will catch everyone who is having symptoms at the time. One of the other things that they are recommending is protective equipment, which for us is mask use. We've included a form. Thank you, Nathan, for going to that. We've included some forms about how to wear a mask, how to clean a mask, even how to make a mask if necessary. A lot of people are of the mindset that a cloth mask doesn't work. That's incorrect. A cloth mask does work. It doesn't work at the same ability of a medical grade mask, but it does help. And when you have everybody wearing a mask, you're doing source control with people who may be sick, and you're also protecting the people who are not sick. So we really recommend masks. You may have employees who don't want to wear them. I assure you, in the hospital, we do not have that problem. Everybody wants a mask, and we give everybody a mask, and we make sure that they have what they need. One thing we can all do to address employees who don't want to wear a mask is just make it a policy. Make it a policy in your business that this is what we're going to do for the near future. Sanitation is going to be a big deal. I don't know how many businesses use cleaning crews or clean their own businesses, but disinfection of high traffic areas is very, very important. If you can provide hand sanitizer, you should. And you can also check the EPA's website for their list of common disinfectants that will take care of the coronavirus. There are a lot of things out there that you can use. And the EPA website, they have a list that is called List N. It lists every disinfectant that will work. So you should be able to use those. Temperature checks are one of the things that, like I said earlier, that we do regularly. We do it daily upon entry to the building. If you see the form that Nathan is showing right now, we record the employee's name, the date, their temperature, and who they report to. If they answer yes to any of our screening questions or they have a temperature, we don't let them in. We refer them to either our triage line, to their healthcare provider, or to our associate health department. And I would recommend the same thing for anyone's employees. If they're answering yes to any of the questions, if they have a fever, then you can refer them to our triage line. It's listed in the letter. You can also refer them to their own private physician's office. The other form that we've included in this packet is an instructional form on how to use hand sanitizer and how to wash your hands. It seems simple, but it isn't always. For hand sanitizer and for hand washing with soap and water, you need to wash for at least 20 minutes. People don't seem to know how long, 20 seconds.
Okay. I was going to clarify 20 seconds or 20 minutes. So.
Yeah, 20 minutes is a bit long. So we're going for 20 seconds based on the World Health Organization's recommendation. So you'll hear a lot of different guidelines on how to judge 20 seconds. Some people say you should sing a song. Some people say you should count. What I do for every employee when they come through general orientation, when they're starting out at Advent Health Hendersonville, is I make them rub their hands together and I time them for 20 seconds so that they can see exactly how long it is. And it really is a long time. But in order for it to be effective, There pays to follow the process. So I would recommend and encourage everybody to include social distancing in, as part of your strategy. If you're in a business where you can keep your employees at least 6 feet apart, you should. If you can't keep your employees 6 feet apart, that's where the protective equipment comes into play. It becomes even more important in an organization that people have to have close contact with each other. And for that, I will stop talking and let anyone answer any questions.
And certainly we will share these slides. We will post them on the Land of Sky website. So if you come back by tomorrow, we'll make sure they're up by tomorrow. Let's see, it said during the screen, are you asking employees about the people that they live with, that they're having symptoms? So maybe the person that you're screening appears to be okay, but they're living in close contact with people who are sick.
I would definitely recommend asking about their contacts. That's one of the things that we do as well. Our staff knows that if they have a close contact in their home who has been exposed, then we basically treat them as if they have been exposed as well.
Is there a certain brand of thermometer that they should do those temperature checks with? Should they, if you touch someone with a thermometer, should it be clean after, you know, between the individuals? How should employers do that?
Absolutely. I can't recommend a certain brand. As Dr. Herbert mentioned, we have used the infrared thermometers that don't require contact with the person while you're screening. They work well as long as the ambient temperature is normal. People coming in from the cold, it tends to make their faces cold. It tends to register a false low temperature. Any thermometer that you use that does require contact with a person should be cleaned after every person.
And how would you clean that thermometer?
Well, the easiest way would be with some sort of wipe. If you have access to a Clorox or a Lysol type wipe, and I'm not recommending a specific brand, those work pretty well. We also can use a mixture of bleach and water. 10 parts water to one part bleach will take care of just about anything. But I would caution you to make sure that it's dry before you use it on another person.
Michael, are there any employee health privacy issues with screening? So we understand there's a lot of federal state regulations regarding privacy of one's health. How do you address that?
I would have my whoever was doing the screening know that they're not to talk about the results of the screening. If you do have somebody who screens positive, you definitely want to take them off to the side. You want to discuss their options as far as seeking health care, and then leave it at that. No one else needs to know.
But there should be processes in place to, like if I come in with a high temperature, that, you know, the whole, everyone knows, you know, that that's a problem for me, that everybody says, well, Nathan has COVID-19 now. So, you know, but if they know I'm not there at work and I came in, they some people, you know, how rumors would get started. So, you know, how should employers address that?
As carefully as possible. That's really the best answer I can give you. We have the same thing. We live in a small town. You know, news goes around. There is not a lot we can do to control what people will say, unfortunately. But we don't have to give them the ammunition. We don't have to provide them with a way to spread rumors.
I think that's all the questions we've got on our group chat now. Okay, if you send someone home, what do you have to, what do they have to meet to be able to return? So if someone doesn't pass that screening process, you've turned them over to a healthcare provider or sent them home, how do you know it's time where they're ready to come back to work?
Well, if they call our triage line or if they see a provider, we're going to test if they are symptomatic. And we're going to advise them to self-isolate at home until the test results come back. If the test results come back and they're positive, then we're going to let them come back to work when their physician releases them. It generally can take more testing or a specific amount of time for people who do test positive. One of the guidelines that we use is from the CDC, and they recommend in the absence of additional testing that a person should not return to work for at least 7 days after the onset of symptoms and 3 days of no symptoms with no medication. So the other option that you have is to have them retested when their symptoms subside. The CDC recommendation for that is 2 negative tests 24 hours apart.
And it's my understanding our community has adequate testing to address those who may be symptomatic and meet certain criteria, that if an employer wants to go in and test all their employees to make sure they're negative, that's probably, we don't have the capability to do that. So how should employers address testing for COVID-19?
Well, we would love to be able to test everybody in all the counties all the time. And hopefully that increased level of testing is coming. I hope to hear something from Governor Cooper this afternoon about more widespread testing. I can tell you that we're able to test all of our employees and we're beginning to do that regularly. We don't have the capacity to go out and test everyone in the community at this point, but I'm hopeful that that's coming up in the future.
We received another question, and this is really not a healthcare question, it's more a legal question. How do you compensate people sent home from work? So, and the name escapes me right now, but there was federal legislation early on in this process to provide paid sick leave to workers, you know, who are or need to be sent home due to this. The employer has to pay for that cost. There is a federal tax credit available. I do see someone entered in the chat box. It's covered under FMLA, but I think there's a specific provision where there is a, it's basically a refundable tax credit, but the employer has to upfront that money first, and it's under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, employee paid leave right. So we will post that information on our, the Land of Sky website as well. So I'll turn it back over to Michael, and if you want to, if you need to transition it to someone else at Advent Health, we'll let you lead that presentation.
Well, that was pretty much it for me, unless anybody has any other questions. Dr. Herbert, do you have anything to add?
I would say that we do have quite a good testing capacity at Advent Health. We use a lab in Texas that requires a sputum sample. And that's a lot easier to administer than the nasopharyngeal swab. The Q-tip down the nose is the way that the other tests are run. And we have found that test to be successful and much more accessible for our patients. So we'd be interested in talking to your workplaces. If you had people that you needed felt needed testing, we have a drive-up center where people come with a physician order or an order from our hotline to get tested. So we can support that. And we're very fortunate to have that option because I know there are, as you said, there are enough tests in the county for symptomatic people right now. But as we move through this, what I'm expecting to see, if the governor lifts restrictions, there will be more disease evident. So we love to test more people. As Michael said, you know, he'd like to test everyone every day, as would I. But realistically, we do have some testing capacity that we could make available if you have concerns about your workforces.
And I know we can go back to Drew if he's still on the call at the end of this call, but I think under Governor Cooper's proposal to reopen North Carolina, testing was one of the key tenets of that. If we have time, we'll go back to Drew and see if he can respond to that. Dr. Herbert, Graham, is there anyone else from Advent Health that would like to share information with us?
I think you've heard enough of my voice.
Sarah, I just want to say thank you for allowing us to
she's wearing a mask.
To be on the call today. And we're here to serve the community in any way. And so we just want to partner with you during this
He's not social distancing. All right.
Thank you so much for practicing what you preach. So, you know, it's one thing to tell people to do certain things, and if you don't do them yourself, so it's like me telling you to eat healthy and exercise, and if I don't do that myself, I don't have much credibility. Graham, would you have anything else to add, or anyone else on your team? If not, Drew, if Drew Christie with the governor's office is still with us, Drew, could you answer talk about the governor's focus on testing?
Yes. There are three things that we're looking for in regards to, potentially, the path to reopen. It's testing, contact tracing, as well as trends. And so I'm not sure on all the specifics of what the amount of testings would be to be able to move forward. But this might be something that the governor would cover at the 3 p.m. Press conference.
Well, thank you so much, Drew. And again, it's my understanding, I think, Dr. Herbert, we are able to do some community testing now. We just, can't do wide-scale testing of everyone in all workplaces. So we did get a question. What are the recommendations around the use of gloves? Is there anyone from Advent that can respond to that, Dr. Herbert or Michael?
Michael?
Yes, I can address that. I was just waiting to be unmuted. So gloves are a useful tool if used appropriately. The problem is many times they are not used appropriately. I would caution people, sometimes wearing gloves out in public lulls you into a false sense of security. You're much better off practicing proper and frequent hand hygiene than using gloves. In the hospital, we wear a lot of gloves and we take them off all the time and wash our hands. We take our gloves off after every procedure, after every contact with patient, after every contact with the patient's environment, and we wash our hands. Unless you are walking around with a large box of gloves and you're able to change gloves every time you touch something, I wouldn't recommend it. But I will recommend the use of hand sanitizer and soap and water.
And we know frequent hand washing is a focus. How many times during a normal work environment should someone wash their hands? Is that every 2 hours, every 3 hours? Is there a guidance there?
Rather than put a timeline on it, I would say based on the things that you touch. If you're working by yourself in your own office and you've cleaned your office and you know that it's clean, you don't need to wash your hands every hour. If you're working in a public facing environment where you're touching other people's possessions or money, credit cards, things like that, then you would definitely want to wash your hands much more frequently. Another big part of this is not touching your face. It sounds simple, but it's really not that easy to do. People touch their face without even knowing it multiple times an hour. If your hands are clean, that's fine. If they're not, then you have other issues.
And Nathan, it's Graham. I wanted to thank you again for the opportunity. We don't want to take too much time, but I will say this. This is a relationship and a process, and we want to be a resource for our community and the business, local governments, and others. And so if it's okay with you, we'll put some contact information maybe in the group chat here so that if you have questions to follow up, we'll get those to the appropriate folks. And throughout the next few weeks, we'll try to be a resource. We're just grateful for the opportunity and thankful for the opportunity to have this conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Graham. And we know, we're not going to reopen today, but we'll follow the guidance from the governor's office and our local counties on how we do that. But we know everyone wants to get back to as close to normal as we can, understanding that's not going to happen overnight. I did have one other question about how do we sterilize a mask or non-woven product mask? I don't know if that makes sense, but we're talking about masks, and I know you know, we just purchased from Land and Sky for our local governments KN95 masks, which came from China. But, you know, how often should someone change those masks out? And if you have a cloth mask, should you wash it on occasion?
You should definitely wash that cloth mask every time you get home if you've been wearing it out. As far as sanitizing it goes, your washer and dryer are going to be your best friend for your cloth masks. The disposable masks are a little trickier. You'll see a lot of things on the internet, and I caution everybody not to believe everything that you read. I've even had some healthcare professionals ask me about things that they've seen on the internet. We have developed processes to sterilize and reuse our masks that the healthcare providers use, but the technology that we use to do that is not generally available to the general public.
It's my understanding, like, if you have a mask, until that mask becomes soiled or wet, you can probably continue reusing that mask. What's a good guidance there? Certainly, if you have a cloth mask, you'd want to wash it every day if you could.
It's true. Wearing a cloth mask over that non-cloth mask can help preserve the life as well, as can wearing a face mask. I understand that not everybody wants to go out in public in a mask and a face shield, but you can reuse the disposable masks. You just have to be very careful about taking it off and putting it back on. Very, very careful. When you remove it, you need to put it someplace so that it can't become contaminated. Wash your hands immediately after taking it off, and then try not to handle the mask again until you need it again. We can recommend storing them in a breathable container, like a paper bag. I think the latest research I've read about how long this virus can live on a medical grade mask is 7 days. So you have to be very careful. When you put the mask back on, make sure you don't touch the outside of the mask or the inside of the mask, and then again, immediately wash your hands afterwards.
Thank you so much, Michael and the team at Advent Health. We still have about, we try to end these calls at 2:00. I know we have Senator Van Dyne, Representative McGrady, perhaps some of our other legislators on the call. Do any of the legislators want to add anything? And we will unmute Senator Van Dyne and Representative McGrady.
I don't have anything to add other than I am so grateful for these meetings. Thank you for making them available.
Representative McGrady, are you available?
I'm available, but I don't actually have anything I need to add to this. I think we're just waiting on the governor's announcement this afternoon, and that will give us a bit of a glide path.
There's a proposal to add $75 million for those small business loans through the Golden Leaf and the Rural Center. Understanding that would have to reach agreement in the Senate to do that. Does it appear like there's bicameral support for that proposal?
All I can say is that the Democratic caucus supports it. Since we are not meeting, I cannot speak for the Republican caucus.
And I understand Representative McGrady can't speak for the Senate, but
that's right. The bill started out at $25 million and jumped to $75 million. Golden Leaf has done a good job managing loan programs for us in other hurricane-related disaster relief. And the hope is that, given the track record here and the obvious need, that, you know, the Senate will go along. I believe Senator Newton, Senator Edwards, and others either today or tomorrow are having a session sponsored by the North Carolina Chamber of Commerce. And so that may be a good opportunity to get an answer to the question you're posing.
On our Land of Sky meeting yesterday, several of our local officials from our towns and our counties, you know, are concerned about the impacts to their budget. They're going through budget process right now. You know, there was a effort at the federal level from the League of Cities, NACO, and many other organizations trying to get some additional support for state and local governments. It appears that hasn't happened yet, but there's a hope that that will happen. Do you have anything to provide any clarity to local governments that are planning their budgets right now?
Chuck McGrady, I don't have any clarity. There's a lot of moving parts, and we're trying to deal with them on a one-on-one basis. I understand, you know, local governments need to be adopting budgets, and they've got the same problem we have. That is, they don't know what their revenues are going to be. Even on the property tax side, which they can control a little bit, the presumption would be that collections are not going to be as strong as they were in past years. So, no, I can't help yet, but when I can, I'll jump into this conversation.
I think we have County Manager Mark Pulliam from Madison County. Mark, you want to share anything with us? If you're available, if not, Mark, I think we're having trouble as far as muting you. If you're not able to add, we have David Nicholson with the County Commissioners Association. David, would you like to provide us an update?
Am I unmuted?
You are unmuted.
Hey, everybody. Just let you know, the association is monitoring what's going on, of course, in Raleigh with the General Assembly getting ready to meet. And also, of course, monitoring the federal money in the different different phases of that we've received so far. So just trying to keep out as much information as we possibly can. Talk about budget. Of course, we're trying to get out some information both on how to do an interim budget, how to look at their current revenue situations for next year. Most of our counties were in pretty good shape going into this crisis, and particularly in sales tax numbers. But the real hit is going to be, of course, in next fiscal year's budget. And it's a hard guess about what kind of guidance to give folks right now from the standpoint of what kind of numbers they can expect. It really depends how quickly we open up and what the economy does afterwards. But we'll just, for our county folks, try to continue you guys as much information as we probably can without giving you information overload, which I know a lot of us are in that situation right now. I mean, I'm on 15, 20 video calls every week. So it's a lot of information going on. So thanks for the opportunity to be here, Nathan.
Thank you so much, David. And it's, you know, our understanding, we're hearing from a lot of local governments, they're projecting 25% decline in sales taxes. I think Representative McGrady added, you know, some decline in property tax collection rate, but the real impact will be sales taxes. Heather Bauer with the Council on Aging is with us. Heather, do you have anything to add regarding our aging population? I know this has put a lot of stress on the work of you and your team. And we appreciate you joining this call today.
Nathan, I really appreciate being a part of the call, and certainly on the same page here with considerations about our potential return to work. The majority of our employees are teleworking, but we have staff here providing direct service. Our current function that we've expanded has been providing food bags to the homebound through a concurrent program with Senior Dining and Nutrition, as well as our regular homebound food delivery services. So we have equipped those employees and volunteers with food grade gloves, as well as cloth masks. Some of those came through United Way requests, and others came from just our searching and working with some local vendors. So we've been successful in that arena. We have continuously had to remind our clients and the families that we serve the importance of social distancing. We were surprised, we were pretty surprised at how long it took for some of the clients we were servicing to respond accordingly when we were bringing the food bags. So it's taken a lot of over-communication and friendly reminders about the importance of these safety protocols. So I don't really have anything to report other than we've been successfully working with our partners and with the Aging Network. So, you know, kudos to Landis-Sky Regional Council as well as Buncombe County Department of Health and Human Services and all other aging providers that have been on these COVID-19 response calls we've been a part of, particularly the aging work group and the food work group. But right now, with that continuity and with the flexibility of our funders and with the support of our donors and our grantees, we've been able to serve, and we are taking on new clients into these programs. So I just want to take a moment to give a little promotion. If you know someone who's 60 or over in Buncombe County that may be concerned about where their next meal is coming from, we are delivering shelf-stable goods. But I really appreciate all this information from the medical perspective as well as from the governing bodies so that I can convey information to our staff members. So thank you so much for everybody's input. It really helps on every level here at the Council on Aging.
Thank you so much, Heather. And if there were one thing that you could see in our region that, you know, we have a great need that we're not maybe currently meeting as well as we could have, what would that be for our aging population, for older adults?
That is a huge question, but we are addressing not only the difficulty of the current needs, but preparing for what the transition will look like. So addressing social isolation and really addressing the high risk nature of this population. But really, again, it's about doing our best to ensure smooth transitions for these individuals and for their families. So being prepared for all the changes that are coming through, whether that be with Medicare or you know other factors that are directly related to the financial health and well-being and economic stability of these individuals. And working on applications with them to ensure that they have access to services and support.
Well, thank you, Heather. Transylvania Commissioner Jason Chappell is on the call. Jason, I've unmuted you. If you have anything to share from Transylvania County, we have a few moments left.
No, I just want to say thank you to all that you're doing for these updates, and thank you for everyone for the federal and state updates. We're continuing like everyone else is, looking very forward to hearing some announcements from the governor to see how we plan accordingly. So,
and Jason, wearing your NC Works hat, are you still receiving lots of individuals with questions regarding UI? We know there's been a tremendous scale up from the Division of Employment Security, but you know, the number of people filing claims continues to grow. So is that, what are you seeing there from the NC Work standpoint?
We continue to field calls. It has lessened from the peak at the very first couple of weeks. We're still getting individuals inquiring about how to apply, especially more so probably some of the ones that are for the self-employment piece, those contractors, independent contractors, where they're turning the switch, I guess, tomorrow on the system to allow those individuals to apply as well. So we're still trying to refer the best we can to DES and still letting individuals know there are employers hiring.
Well, Jason, we appreciate everything your team does with Blue Ridge Community College and NC Works and Henderson and Transylvania County. I think it's almost 2 o'clock. So if you have any questions, you certainly can reach out to me at nathan@landosky.org. My cell phone again is 828-768-3216. We'll try to post the presentations that were and the resources today that were presented on our Landosky COVID-19 webpage. And so hopefully that will be up by tomorrow. We appreciate everyone joining these calls. We'll have another call next Thursday at 1 p.m. I hope everyone has a wonderful day, and please stay safe.